John Powers, Illinois Public Media News.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Risk Management Commodities, Lafayette, Indiana; Fertilizer Dealer Supply, Philo; and Birch Tree Counseling and Consulting, Champaign. These business partners join the friends of WYLL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
You're listening to WYLL AM 580. Let's take a look at your Champaign-Urbana weather for the rest of today. We're expecting a possibility of showers and thunderstorms this afternoon with locally heavy rainfall possible. A high of 82 remains, and the chance of precipitation has been reduced to about 50% for the rest of today. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low of 65, south winds of 10 to 15 miles per hour in the evening. Tomorrow, mostly sunny with a high of 84 expected. We're going to see south winds of 10 to 15 miles per hour, getting up to gusts of about 25 miles, so it'll be hot and windy tomorrow. By tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 68, and Thursday, breezy, partly sunny, 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms again, so we are going to see a good chance of rain by the weekend. Now, we have a couple of announcements regarding flooding in the state this hour. A flood warning continues for the following rivers in Illinois: Illinois River near Peoria. This affects Peoria, Tazewell, and Woodford counties this hour. We are also seeing a flood warning in effect for the Illinois River at LaGrange, Lock and Dam Tailwater, Maradosa, and Valley City. And this hour, flood warning continues to be in effect in LaSalle, affecting Bureau and LaSalle counties. Also, we saw heavy rainfall amounting to over 2 inches over the past 48 hours, so that means a big rise in the Illinois River Basin, which means that there is still a possibility of flooding until later today. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WYLL AM 580.
Support comes from the Yoga Institute of Champaign-Urbana, with beginner-level instruction in Iyengar yoga and special classes for men, women, teens, seniors, and for those with or recovering from cancer. New classes start the first week of June. Details at yoga-cu.com.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WYLL. For months, members of the Illinois State House have been waiting to call same-sex marriage for a vote. Sponsors say that they don't quite have the votes needed to pass the bill, but Tony Arnold reports that there are some consequences to all of this waiting.
Take a minute and imagine what Chicago's Boys Town neighborhood will be like if same-sex marriage is approved in Illinois. For Chuck Hyde, it's his job.
We've been kind of on the ready.
Hyde is the general manager of the bar Sidetrack in the heart of Boys Town on Halsted Street.
We decorate big. Our events are big. It's a fun bar, and it can hold a lot of people.
I caught up with Hyde just as construction crews were wrapping up a renovation of the interior of the bar. It has several rooms, a few bars, an outdoor patio, the kind of place Hyde is hoping people will come to celebrate bachelor or bachelorette parties, or wedding receptions. Hyde was hoping construction would be done in time so he could host a celebration in case the state legislature voted in favor of same-sex marriage. Instead, he's been waiting.
There were a number of weeks back that we thought it might be very close, and we were kind of waiting by the phone, literally, the vote's going up, the vote's not going up. We were kind of like there. And if it was going to happen, we were ready. We had ordered champagne. We had glassware ready. We were ready for the balloons. We had posters. We have all kinds of things. We had some signs. And we were going to let the world know that we were thrilled and throwing a party and ready to celebrate.
So is the champagne still on ice back there?
It is in the cooler.
Hyde says he was underprepared when same-sex civil unions passed in Illinois 2 years ago. The demand for a party when that passed was bigger than he anticipated. So he's trying not to leave anything to chance this time around. That means, though, he's been on edge for more than 3 months. The Illinois State Senate approved same-sex marriage in February. Since then, it's lingered in the House of Representatives. Supporters say they've been waiting to call it for a vote because they don't have the necessary 60 yes votes. And as wedding season arrives, those in the wedding business have had a lot of uncertainty about what their summer will look like.
All of the wedding industry is following it very, very closely.
Beth Bernstein's a Chicago wedding planner. She says she helped plan a midnight civil union ceremony for 6 couples who wanted to file as soon as possible 2 years ago. But since civil unions passed, things have plateaued.
I don't think it provided the lasting effect of the business that we thought we may see.
Bernstein says she's seen many couples waiting for word from Springfield before planning their wedding. But for Amanda Marquez and Maggie Moran, waiting is not appealing. When I visit their Logan Square apartment, books and TV show DVDs line their living room shelves neatly organized. And close by is a small pile of little origami paper stars.
Are those the colors there, the purple, green, blue?
This is going to make us look really bad, really tacky. We're actually using the rainbow, but we're not going for the whole rainbow effect. So we're doing like half of the tables are warm color, and then the other half of the tables are cool colors.
Moran and Marquez are having a civil union ceremony on June 22nd. If the proposed bill passes, they could apply to have that civil union turned into a marriage. Marquez says she doesn't want to wait on the government for other things like buying a house or having kids. So why wait for the legislature?
Not knowing exactly when, you know, how things will go in Springfield, when it'll happen, we just moved forward.
Moran says it will be heart-wrenching if same-sex marriage fails in Springfield. But she says it would be more heart-wrenching not committing to Marquez. She says that's too much to put on one vote. I'm Tony Arnold.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WYLL. Now, as we're seeing with the session winding down in Springfield this week, a lot of different types of legislation are being considered, including how to roll out Medicare in the state. Well, hearing aids are not covered by most insurance companies or Medicare, and there are no provisions for them under the Affordable Care Act. High costs and minimal insurance coverage may be keeping adults out of the hearing aid market altogether. Private companies are trying to lower prices by selling the devices directly over the internet, but specialists warn that this comes with a lot of costs as well. NPR's Brenda Salinas has this report.
Hot house, baseball.
If you ever get fitted for a hearing aid, you can expect to hear this sound. But one thing you might not be expecting, the sticker price.
I was real surprised. I was really, really surprised.
That's Arthur Clark. He's an 82-year-old retiree. He's getting his hearing aids repaired, and he's looking to save some money, which is why he's here, at Costco. That's right. The place that sells 60-roll packs of toilet paper is in the hearing aid business. Manufacturers and economies of scale. They can set up clinics like this one right in the store and give deep discounts on hearing aids. Chris Asaro is a hearing aids technician at a Costco in Washington, D.C. He says that even with the discounts, many people can't afford hearing aids. He's seen seniors come in just for the free test. They want to see how bad their hearing has gotten. But many walk out empty-handed.
A lot of times they are on a fixed income, they're on Social Security, they only get so much a month, so they can't afford to purchase a hearing aid.
Digital hearing aids have been around since the 70s. With most technology, price drops over time. Think of what a flat-screen TV costs now compared to a few years ago. But hearing aids are an exception. Their price has stayed about the same, about $1,500 per ear. The higher-end models can go up to a few thousand. Ross Porter is the founder of Embrace Hearing, a startup that sells their own brand of hearing aids directly to consumers online.
So the actual hearing aid itself is fairly simple. All it has is a few microphones, a speaker, a kind of internal chip to it, and then the housing and the casing. But overall, the hardware involved in a hearing aid isn't more than a few hundred dollars per hearing aid.
Porter says hearing aids are expensive because audiologists and distributors charge a steep markup. Don't blame us, says Virginia Ramachandran. She's an audiologist with the Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit and says many of her patients need to learn how to use their hearing aids.
You can imagine if somebody gave you a laptop computer and you've never used one before. You wouldn't know how to turn it on. You wouldn't know what programs to open up or how to use them. And so a huge component of a hearing aid is the professional services that go along with it.
She says if you want to make hearing aids cheaper, make it so more people enter the market. That way, some of the research and development costs incurred by the industry leaders could be divided among a bigger group. But she says what's really keeping people from buying hearing aids isn't the cost.
People genuinely perceive hearing loss as being associated with older age. And so any excuse not to get them is a good one if it's something that you don't really want.
Dropping the cost of hearing aids can nudge a hearing impaired senior in the right direction. But there are always going to be people who would rather go without. They're embarrassed. Ramachandran says that in European countries where hearing aids are covered by insurance, rates of adoption aren't significantly higher than ours. She says if seniors saw the devices as something as normal as eyeglasses, they'd be more likely to get them. This would expand the market, and it could even bring the price down. The industry is already working on this strategy. They're looking for aging celebrity spokesmodels to make the pitch. Brenda Salinas, NPR News.
You're listening to WYLL. Now just imagine the National Mall in Washington and what's there right now. You have the Lincoln Memorial and, of course, the Martin Luther King Monument. And now imagine a giant bubble right in the middle of it. That's something that's being debated right now by the Smithsonian Board of Trustees, who can't agree on whether or not to move forward with an adventurous new bubble design that would give them more space for their museums. Their indecision led to the resignation of the museum's director last week. NPR's Elizabeth Blair brings us up to date.
Some say the windowless Hirshhorn Museum of Contemporary Art on the National Mall looks like a concrete bunker. The building is shaped like a donut. The translucent blue bubble would balloon out of the hole in the middle. The architects are world-renowned. Diller, Scofidio, and Renfro worked on the High Line, New York City's hugely popular public park. In a TED Talk, architect Liz Diller described her vision for the Hirshhorn.
It's basically one big volume of air that just oozes out in every direction. The membrane is translucent. It's made of silicone-coated glass.
The bubble's biggest supporter was Richard Koshalik, the Hirshhorn's director. He was hired by the Smithsonian 5 years ago, in part to shake things up with exciting new ideas. But last week, when the Board of Trustees couldn't come to an agreement on whether to continue fundraising to build the bubble, Koshalik resigned. Richard Curran, the Smithsonian's Undersecretary for History, Art, and Culture, isn't optimistic about the bubble's future now, even though he thinks it would have been good for the staid National Mall.
I think it would have shown the airiness of our democracy, the flow of things, the fact that we weren't a solid, rock, unmoving type of country. So I could see its symbolic appeal.
Curran says about half of the $15 million it would take to complete the project has already been raised from private sources, but he's doubtful the Smithsonian can raise the rest. And in these days of budget cuts and sequestration, they don't plan on asking Congress to pay for a bubble. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News, Washington.
WILL programming is made possible by Country Financial Representative Scott Jackson, Village at the Crossing in Champaign. Since 1990, offering U of I faculty, staff, and employees planning advice and retirement solutions designed to balance current needs and provide for future financial security. Online at scottjacksonfinancial.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 28th of May, 2013. It's the birthday of the author Ian Fleming, born London, 1908, to a wealthy family. His father was a member of Parliament. Young Ian worked as a foreign journalist. He was a banker, stockbroker, and assistant to the director of British Naval Intelligence, worked for the London Sunday Times, before he took up the career that would make him famous as the author of the James Bond novels. The first one, Casino Royale, in 1953. A playboy spy, fast cars, nifty gadgets, and hot women. It's the birthday of Mae Swenson, born Logan, Utah, 1913. Swedish parents, immigrants who came to this country as converts to the Mormon faith. She was the oldest of 10 children. She became the black sheep of the family when she questioned the Mormon faith at the age of 13. Started keeping a diary, composing poems. Writing was the one place she felt free to express herself. She said, "I'm two eyes looking out of a suit of armor. I write because I can't talk." She was in her 20s when she moved to New York City. Had a number of low-paying jobs. At one point, she shoplifted a dress so she'd look respectable when she went to the welfare office to ask for help. Her reputation and success grew slowly. Her first book came out when she was 41 years old. Another Animal was the title. She got a two-month residency at Yaddo, where she met the poet Elizabeth Bishop. They became friends, possibly lovers. And though Bishop lived in Brazil, they exchanged letters, 260 of them, over the next 29 years. Mae Swenson wrote to Bishop, "Not to need illusion, to dare to see and say how things really are, is the emancipation I would like to attain." Her collections include the complete love poems of Mae Swenson and a book entitled Dear Elizabeth, Five Poems and Three Letters to Elizabeth Bishop. It's the birthday of Walker Percy, Birmingham, Alabama, 1916. His early life was marked by tragedy. Grandfather, father, both committed suicide with shotguns. His mother drowned when her car ran off the road into a stream. He and his brother were adopted by their uncle in Greenville, Mississippi, and it was there that he met his lifelong best friend, the neighbor boy, the author, Shelby Foote. Percy went off to college in Chapel Hill, later to New York for medical school. He got tuberculosis, spent 2 years at a sanitarium. He later said, "It was the best thing that ever happened to me because it gave me a chance to quit medicine. I had a respectable excuse." He became a full-time writer, wrote two novels, couldn't get either of them published. He kept at it, and his novel, The Movie,